Hey everyone, welcome to the Mass Construction Show with today's guest, Mike Weber, Principal at Gaston Electrical. I'm your host, Joe Kelly, and this is a podcast about all things construction in Massachusetts and beyond. In this episode, we discuss the Gaston Pulse and try to get to the bottom of why material lead times are coming back to earth with almost all trades, but electrical equipment refuses to budge, and in some cases is growing. Mike shares his insight on the market and why the lead times remain high, and there appears to be no end in sight. Now, for everyone that enjoys what we're doing here, please take the time to write a review, rate, or share the episode in whichever way you see fit. It's the only way we get discovered, and if we don't grow, we die. Today's show is brought to you by Central, commercial carpenters, in support of our conversations. Enjoy the show. Hey, Mike. Welcome to Mass Construction Show.
Thanks for having me back, Joe.
Yes. I don't know what we're at. I probably should have looked at ahead of time, but you're, I think you've moved into regular category.
All right. Perfect. Yeah. A little status change.
Yep. This conversation is driven solely by some, to me, which was mind-boggling lead times I saw in your most recent quarterly, what do you call it? Like an outlook?
The Pulse.
The Pulse.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like an...
It's an information, hey, look, we wanted to go to market with something that wasn't salesy, that was information-driven so that people would get their eyes on Gaston, but also get some good information that, you know, would help them with their projects.
Yeah, I would say great information.
You say,
And we're talking lead times on a whole host of, you know, equipment. Mm-hmm. Basic material, even.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't know if I'd call an electrical tub equipment.
Yeah, it's equipment.
Yeah. So equipment lead times, but then even MI cable.
Yeah, whatever, some really specific electrical items that we use in an everyday project, but and they affect every job that has electrical on it. But really, we focus on kind of like what we know.
Yeah, and I was just fighting not to say equipment because I didn't want people to think like, you know, ATS switch or switch gear or things. It's everything.
Yeah, we go into data materials. We talk about, you know, fire alarm stuff, even miscellaneous, like you said, MI cable, building wire, that type of stuff.
Yep. So there were some numbers that I, you know, I watch your report pretty regularly when it comes out quarterly, and it was mind-boggling to me that I was seeing numbers go up. Mm. Everywhere else, yeah, there's some outliers where someone will still say, oh, it's taking me 3 months to get mineral wool or whatever. Like, okay, but those are... one-off things. It isn't any one trade or specialty that seems to really not be coming back down to earth.
Yep.
And in some cases, still growing from lead times. And to me, it was almost having trouble circling a square because multifamily is dead. We all know the trouble that office is having.
Yep.
There's a bunch of regulatory headwinds with code issues and Birdo, you see permitting numbers down. Interest rates up.
Construction costs,
layoffs across a lot of construction companies here locally, jobs that are getting put on hold or scaled back. Lee Kennedy, similar. So in the monthly, and it's not even monthly, in the newsletter that I do that's kind of based on, hey, if there's relevant information that needs to be shared, that email goes out. If there's no relevant information that month, nothing goes out. So it's not a monthly newsletter, but what I call the Mass Construction Network. If you're listening and you want to get it, if you go to massconstruction.org, you'll see a tab that says Mass Construction Network. You go there. But in that newsletter, we usually have your report and Cox Engineering's report, and you get a good grasp of basically the MEP trades other than fire protection.
Sure.
Right. And then Lee Kennedy has recently come out. I think they've put it out a couple times
before. This is three or four maybe. Alan does a nice job with it.
Yeah.
Him and his team.
And him and I have been kind of going back and forth. And I asked him, I said, hey, do you mind if I plug this in the next report? And he was on board. And theirs tended to be more like almost like a sentiment index. Like
what are people feeling?
Yeah.
Right. Optimism, pessimism, what is it?
Exactly. Yep. And they spoke to 30 plus maybe subcontractors and said, you know, how are things looking? And from a sentiment standpoint, I think it didn't look horrible, but the number of every sub had some weakness in their future. A lot of them were, hey,
and I think, I don't know if how you feel about this, but the first couple quarters of 2024, they needed some jobs. And then 25, late 24, 25, they felt like they were okay, but we could kind of really use something right now.
Sure.
And in my mind, does that mean that, okay, well, yeah, that job's good now, but when beginning of 25 hits,
when it's supposed, like, to start, is it going to start?
Yeah, is it going to start? Right. So the sentiment wasn't awesome.
Sure.
I'll say that. It wasn't doom and gloom.
Yeah. I mean, I think just to comment on Alan's report, I kind of feel the way that Lee Kennedy does as well. You know, end user buildings are being built. So we've got academic, we've got healthcare, we've got some large life sciences or insurance companies, you name it, that, you know, they're going to use their building for 50, 60, however many years. Those are going forward. Yep. You know, somebody needs, you know, a new manufacturing plant. They're building it. What we're not seeing anymore is any spec office buildings, lab buildings. Those are,
yeah, we, I have, mean, a glut.
They're dead. Lab, I mean, yeah. So all of a sudden, the lab space went from, you know, negative to all of a sudden there's all this
overflow.
Like, everyone's, you know, all these leases are expiring. Large companies that own leases are trying to sublease their space. People are sort of coming back to the office. So, you know, even the office tenant fit out stuff, which we do a ton of, is few and far between. And when it's there, it's very competitive, right?
Yes.
So, depending on the size of the job and kind of how Gaston fits into that, you know, we're competitive on lots, but, you know, some is just, it's just hard to get down to a number that's, you know, to do it for free doesn't seem like, you know, that's not fun at all.
No.
We've done that before. That's a bad lesson to learn.
Yeah. And there's an interesting outlook on office, which is, you know, it's not like all leases come due at a particular time. Mm-hmm. This is almost like, I heard somebody refer to it as like a rolling crisis.
Sure.
Because as these leases come up and don't get renewed, it just kind of compounds on itself, and like, it's going to be a slow moving crash, not a
yeah. And that's how lease activity is, right? It's not like the end of the year where most people's, you know they go from January to December, that's their year, you know. And I know some people are different, but generally, like, leases are whenever you needed a space, that's when it is.
Yes.
So I see that as well. I mean, you know, general, like, you know, macro outlook from our perspective, and we have a little bit of that in the pulse, is that it's slowing down. You know, lots of layoffs in the GM and CM world. Yep. You know, a lot of field layoffs in the subcontractor world, especially in the short term. Mm-hmm. I love the optimism from people that I've read, you know, coming into late 24, 25. I don't know where that comes from. You know, we have backlog as a company, and, you know, we're strong, and it'll be fine. But certainly tighten the belt a little bit. It's not, look, it, in the grand scheme of things, for the past 6, 7, 8 years, it's been really good in this market from just construction wise. You know, everyone's been out straight. We've all pretty much been hiring. You know, as a subcontractor, we were saying no to projects, which is, you know, a great situation to be in.
Yeah.
You know, not trying to bite off, you know, more than you can chew. And that's really just almost stopped in the last 2 months, even, right? Because we were bidding large projects up, and we still are, but just not as many of them, up through Christmas almost, you know, Thanksgiving-ish, and then they just kind of slowed down.
As optimistic as a view as anybody wants to take on it,
mm-hmm.
there's no, I don't think there's any defensible position to say that, hey, we haven't slowed down at all. Like,
correct.
No argument can be made there. So if we were at, and hey, we still might be a great place because,
that's right.
Hey, we were, stock market terms, okay, we were at 30,000 and now we're at 28. Okay, yeah, well, we're still doing pretty good.
Yeah, it's still better, right, than it was, you know, 5 years ago, right?
Yes.
So,
yes, you can look at that optimistically in one way, but I don't see any way where you look at it as things haven't slowed down. So if things have slowed down,
mm-hmm.
how do I look at everybody else coming back to earth on lead times? And then I look at the electrical report that you guys put out.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
It's like mind-boggling.
Yeah,
100 so, plus weeks.
So specifically, you're talking about large generators, things over a megawatt. You're talking about switch gear, substation setups, lineups that are, you know, 85 plus weeks to get. So why? So I have the same question.
That's what you're here for.
You know, you know, and again, just to reiterate what you said already, in compound that, you know, we you look at, you know, air handling units and large mechanical gear that was, or equipment that was, you know, let's say it had a 40-week lead time pre-COVID. It went to 80 as well. It's back down to 45 or 40. Yes. It's almost relatively the same as it was prior. Why electrical? Great question. And most of this is my theories, mm-hmm. but, you know, I talk to a lot of people and ask the same questions. And, you know, every job we're on, switchgear and generators are a problem. Mm. And every job I ask the same questions, why? And the answers are always different.
If you don't mind, if I interrupt, before you go there, because I guarantee people are listening and saying, because they're getting tortured, whether it's for roofing materials yep. or whatever right now. Not saying that there are not other trades and other products that are way out. There are certainly some one-off ones. What I'm getting at is, like, if when you look at the Cox report, they do it with like a red, green, and yellow.
Sure.
Red is the lead time has gone up. Green is it's gotten better. Yellow is it's staying the same. You look at their report, and there's a natural spread on that. It's a third, a third, a third.
Sure.
You guys, I don't think anything would be...
I mean... How about this? Like most everything else in the electrical world, because that's what I'll speak to. So I'm not super familiar with other building trades. Right. And I know glazing had an issue. I know, you know, there was, you know, roofing materials had issues. Like, exactly. Yep. So I know only because that affected our job sites. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the world I live in and the conversations I have weekly are regarding switchgear and generators for the most part. And what, you know, COVID put a kink in, you know, their operations. So let's call it the major four manufacturers, Schneider, Eaton, ABB, Siemens, right? Those are the main players in the electrical switchgear manufacturing world in the United States. They're all very similar. Some are better than others in, you know, if I wanted busway from a certain manufacturer, I could probably get it in 18 weeks mm-hmm. versus another one in 40. But, you know, it, at the same time, the one who can get me in 18 weeks is their switchboard is 80 weeks, and you know the other guy's switchboard is 60 weeks. So what am I looking for, right? Yeah, exactly. Yep. You couldn't do that. You couldn't build a job with that. You need, you know, a single manufacturer. So COVID hit, you know, and everybody shut down. And again, I'm going to hypothesize, but summarize the conversations I've been having the last 2 years plus because of this issue. Factories shut down. Layoffs happened. The government, you know, paid people. They had a very when the factories opened back up. My gut tells me that they did not expect the orders to come in like they did. Basically, I could see it in my revenue and you know 2020 for us the second half of 2020 when Boston reopened, you know, construction, call it May, June ish. I mean, we were balls to the walls. Yeah, like hey, we have the same schedule. Everybody like we got to work overtime. Let's go, and you know. Things did not slow down. Interest rates were super low. It's a great time for builders, you know, for developers to build at that time. A lot of material pricing went down. So on a relative scale, what a great time to start a project, right?
And you could do work when no one was in an office.
That was the other thing, right? The city was empty. So people like, you know, it was easy to get downtown, especially in the union environment, right?
Yep.
So my gut tells me that when they came out of COVID, the manufacturers generally didn't anticipate the volume that was going to either, you know, it was going to remain the same or it was just going to actually increase. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. And, you know, where we're at now in 2024, COVID's not a reason anymore.
Right.
That's actually off the table. I will tell you that, you know, I hear raw materials are hard to get. And I asked that question. So the electrified steel we can't get because it came from Russia, or you know this specific type of plastic is only made in this one plant in Germany, and they're having a hard time making it because of some oil issue that they're having, and maybe that has to do with you know some macro global issue or whatever it may be.
But yeah,
there's all these different reasons.
Yeah, there's geopolitical reasons that have always.
Come and go anyways, right? And really, like, I don't give a shit. I want my stuff. Right. You told me 60 weeks, and now it's 85. And then at the 84th week, you told me I have to wait another 2 months. And that's really the communication issue is more than anything. And if you notice my most recent pulse, I talk about the communication that we have from the factories to our distributors to the electrical contractors to the GC and owner community. I mean, we're just not getting good information, and it's frustrating. So going back to the reasons for it, I would also talk to, you know, so once the factories did staff back up and the orders continue to come in and come in and come in. I would guess now that most factories are probably 100% back operational. Now, are those newer employees that needed more training, you know, as opposed to some, you know, the replacements or whatever it may be? So maybe that's some issue. But I would also say that they're all behind schedule because the orders are still coming in. And why are they coming in, right? And this goes to generators as well. The data center market in North America specifically is on fire, right? you know, we're in Massachusetts, and there's a couple of data center providers that are very good in what they are, but, you know, those are not hyperscale data centers. Those are not millions of square feet. We don't have those here yet. And everywhere else they do. So if I'm AWS, if I'm Facebook, if I'm Microsoft, and I'm building 1 million square feet in Northern Virginia, I'm going to go to Schneider and say, hey, I'll give you this order, but, you know, for a, you picked a number, $100 million, I don't even know.
Yep.
And that said, I need this stuff in 40 weeks. So who's going to go to the front of the line?
You with your $300,000 order?
That's right.
Or their,
you know, or even like a $5 million order, they don't care. You know what I mean? They almost treat us, you know, the government's got their own production line.
Yep.
You know, the OEM, Gaston, and all the other electrical contractors have their own production line, and then data centers have their production line. Yep. And guess who's last? The one with all the contractors, right? Yep. So this is just me hypothesizing, because where else is the country super busy in construction, right? I mean, some other areas for sure, in regards to utility upgrades and things like that, because, but.
Yeah, can you explain to folks what is a data center? Like, you hear people talk about it. What's the other term? Critical?
Mission critical.
Mission critical, yep. You know, construction, data center construction, for people that might not understand.
I mean, data centers are, you know, It's a place that receives information and then and basically gets it out back out and pushes it along the line. So it receives data along, you know, typically fiber, and it will process that information and then send it at a faster rate of speed to someplace else. So as more information comes into a data center, you need more equipment to handle that. It's just like you would, you know, equate it to like number of amps in a building, right? If you haven't 800 amp service, but you have equipment that draws, you know, more than that, you need a larger service, right? So as more and more information along the internet is required, you know, these data centers become, you need more power, right? And it's measured in megawatts, right?
Yeah. Is any of it storage?
Sure. Some of it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm not, you know, Gaston, you know, EMCOR, which we're part of, builds lots and lots of data centers. I have not built a data center yet, because they don't truly exist around here yet.
I mean, you had some interesting data that you brought with you with respect to how much activity is happening.
So, you know, I do my best to get this, and I got this from a peer at EMCOR, and it's a North American Data Center report from Jones Lang LaSalle, and this is the H1 2023 report. So what they did is they took the top, let's call it, 20 metros in North America. So Atlanta, Austin, Boston, Chicago, Denver, Las Vegas, Northern California, Northern Virginia. Then they have some Canadian cities as well. And basically they had what's under construction for data centers as far as square footage and megawatts, and then what's planned. And the numbers in under construction was 22 million square feet is under construction. Again, this is a year ago, probably when this was published, or a little less than that. And then planned construction for data centers was almost 80 million square feet.
So
like
close to fourfold.
Exactly.
Between three and fourfold.
And that's under construction and planned that they know about, right? So what else don't they know about?
Right.
And you know, so I think that this, in a great report from JLL, by the way, but I mean, it has to be part of the problem of why we can't get generators.
And what was it? Because this is having an exponential effect, right?
Yeah.
With technology growing at such a rapid pace between Bitcoin, as you were talking earlier, AI, and then just general cloud storage of so much software that used to be on people's computers.
They were local,
You know, everything is now centralized somewhere, and that's just space that's needed. So that's doing a hockey stick
100%. On us,
right? So that 22 million square feet prior to COVID might have been $10 million, right? Yeah. So it had already doubled, and then you're 4X-ing the double, and now
I mean, just think about
supplies can't keep up.
Yeah, I mean, think about the just COVID alone, and then like everyone was on video all of a sudden, right? That that needs to get transmitted somehow. Yes. It needs to be fast.
Great point.
Right?
Yep.
So that, you know, in that, but really, it's the AI. It's those. It's as that evolves and becomes part of every industry in whatever way that shakes out, which is super interesting to me. Yep. Everyone's going to use it, and you know, that requires data. That requires data to move at fast speeds.
Yeah. In an exponential way.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Which you can't exponentially manufacture more stuff.
Yeah,
right? Unless there's some new technology that comes online to help you do that.
Sure.
But at the moment, so that makes a ton of sense.
Again, this is you know,
that's
me
your theory.
Asking around and talking and being poignant and asking, and sort of that may be a reason. But yeah, no, I think that's part of the reason. I also think, you know, when it comes back to switchgear generally in those manufacturers, you know, I would say generally that those factories are behind schedule still because we have been very busy for 6-7 years, whatever the number is you want to pick, you know, to start this, you know, kind of bull construction market. So they didn't plan great. They didn't anticipate how busy they'd been. So now that they are back to full operation and working 3 shifts and doing all those things that we really need them to do for our projects, and they've increased prices because they said, screw it, the demand is still here, right?
Yep.
So yeah, I know you wanted to talk about pricing too, and that's part of In Our Pulse. But yeah, they've been increasing pricing, you know, for the last
right
2 years. Like, you know, and I don't necessarily blame them, but it does affect my world because it's much more expensive to the owners and contractors that I work for.
No, I absolutely don't blame them because they're probably having costs for training new people, bringing new people on, working time and a half, working
building new
double
factories,
time,
right?
Building new factories.
I mean, like, it's simple economics.
Retooling equipment. If you normally planned on having, you know, just pick random numbers, 100 hours of runtime on a piece of equipment every year, and now it's 300 hours of runtime, you're needing to replace equipment faster. You're needing to do more maintenance on that equipment. Like, those are all costs that they're going to pass along to the end consumer.
Yeah, plus it's just supply and demand. You know what I mean?
They have, like, you over a barrel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, what else are you going to do, right?
Yep.
So I find it concerning. You know, because again, I'm still having conversations literally weekly with ownership groups and factory representative from the major manufacturers that we deal with, and they're not bad people, and they're trying their asses off, but they just don't know when they can build this stuff.
Yeah.
And when they do know, that they sometimes miss those dates.
Yeah, and I think people locally might struggle to grasp, you know, the scale
Yeah.
of this, because we're not seeing it. You know, I talked to Dave Mullins on the show a few times, he's a big data center, like that's kind of where his background has always been, and he's out in the Chicago area now building one, and it's like an entire city that
is like big jobs
spun up around the, and it felt almost like when the Ever Casino was going on, and you just had like a whole neighborhood of trailers and like just an insane amount of
thousands of workers
and,
on site every
day. And like, you know, 85 superintendents on the job. There's like things like that, right? And the scale of that, and I liken it to the casino thing because you have the equal speed needed.
Yeah.
Right? We're like, okay, this needs to be done on this day. There's liquidated damages.
Sure.
If we're not done by that time, we have to crank multiple shifts of, you know, 700-800 people a shift,
right?
You know, and we're gonna friggin' crank.
And yeah, because I mean,
right?
The owner says every day I'm not open, I'm losing out on extra revenue, right?
Yeah, and there's some end user, whoever that is, whether it's Google, or AWS, or Facebook, or whoever the end user is, that is like, okay, we have a problem with capacity.
Sure,
we need this now. Go, put your foot on the gas and go as fast as humanly possible because we don't have enough now, and every day we need more.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, the demand is getting there. Is more and more demand as well, and that's why that number is so large under planned construction, right?
Yeah. We don't see it here locally because what you were showing me, what's the number of Boston?
It's funny. If you go through their report, the under construction in Boston is zero. Okay. And the planned construction for Boston is also zero. Yes. It's the only market of the top 20 metropolitans in North America.
That is nothing.
And I've got some calls into JLL to find out why and when.
Yeah, I know. And I don't know if that's because it's new ground up. I think that could be it, because I know even in the downtown crossing area, there's like three
Markley
or four floors
there,
in a building where that's all data center, but it's not.
Digital Realty was around. So again, hypothesizing, electricity is expensive here. Land is expensive here. Labor is expensive here. Maybe we're close enough to New York and New Jersey where the data can get there. And then,
you put it in Pennsylvania.
Exactly. So, I'm not exactly sure all those reasons why. I have to think maybe not, maybe not a hyperscale data center, but I have to think that within the next 10, 15 years, there'll be some, smaller data centers that will, maybe live outside. Live outside 495, Worcester, that area, and kind of handle, because that's what we're seeing in New Jersey right now to handle some of New York's traffic.
Yeah. And it could be, what do they consider the greater Boston area?
That's fair, right? Too.
Because you look at different data, different reports. Some of them will have everything from Portland, Maine down to Rhode Island.
That's
then
true.
Other ones will be inside of 128. That's a big difference. So it could be that. But either way, I mean, what's the largest?
The largest is Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
And that's that makes sense. That's Washington, D.C. That's the government, right? Yeah. Plus,
What was it they were projecting?
So they've got almost over 6.5 million square feet under construction and 45 million plus planned.
That's
so
wild.
Big numbers.
Yeah,
which is great. I mean, it's fantastic for construction generally, right? But locally in Boston, not great, because I still think it's affecting our projects.
Yeah, you get the ramifications of it, but you don't get any of the benefits
of
it. Right. Yep. And if you think about it, that JLL report doesn't appear to be wrong. I don't know anyone that worked on data center. The only one that I do is out in Chicago.
I reference it because I'm taking it for what it is.
Yeah. And I think it's right.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels right.
I mean,
how about this? Talking to people around the country that I know, and consultants and other companies like mine. They're doing a lot of data center work.
Yeah. And you said you're not doing it. I don't know any GCs that have done them recently around here.
Not locally.
Yeah. No. So I think those numbers are probably accurate.
And the other thing is, we had, when it comes to lead times too, the supply chain was an issue for a long time. That's gone. COVID's gone.
Yep.
Supply chain's gone. Raw materials is an iffy excuse.
Yep.
You know what I mean? As far as I'm concerned, it's demand, it's poor planning, poor communication, and then, and the demand is because of, in my eyes, something like this data center, activity around the country.
Yeah. Now, does that, we're talking about lead times. Does that lead time translate to dollars? In a sense, and like I said, even if it's indirect, where it's like, okay, we're going to pay for expediting, or switchgear A costs, $100 million, and switchgear B costs $200 million, but we can get B here in 60 weeks and the other one takes 100. Let's pay for
them
more.
So, a little bit in the analogy you use with 100 and 200 million, but those are some large numbers. I'd like that job. So, there may be, depending on the build, right? Every job we do is a prototype, no matter what. And I've said this before. And
you will get a lot of people that will argue with you.
I don't care if it's the same designer and same engineer and a very similar footprint. It's a prototype. Everything's different.
Eric Sanford is very upset right now. He's a regular listener.
Lots of similarities, right?
Yep.
But even if you have different people doing it, it's a prototype. So regardless. But there's so many there's a lot of similarities between a lot of the jobs we do. And yes, if we need a certain switchgear package or a certain generator, and one lead time is, 20 weeks better than the next, there may be a consideration to pay for the more expensive one. Absolutely. So that's one. Number two, time frame on projects. So if we don't order our switchgear or generator early enough on a job, we're going to push the end date of the job out. Yep. So, you know, what do you want to use for a percentage of what every year that goes by? We can use inflation as a number plus, you know, what's the cost index? Is it 4% per year? Things generally go up in construction about that much. Whatever the number is, sometimes it's 8, sometimes it's 2, but, you know, let's use 4%. So if we push a job out 6 months because we can't get something, that's costing the owner at least 2% more across the entire board. That's all the and then other things like
sometimes paying for acceleration.
Yeah, paying for expediting, which most manufacturers aren't accepting right now. Mm-hmm. One in specifically has, but that's a high dollar value.
Yep.
It does cost a little bit more, but I would say more than anything, it costs time. Yep. Because what happens is when you have an 80-week lead time piece of gear that you need, and you have a schedule drawn out, and we planned it, and we did everything right, and we were agreed, and we need power on in 100 weeks from today. And I just ordered my switchgear today. If I don't get that at 80 weeks, or call
critical,
it 90,
it's critical path.
Yep. Right? It's critical path. So all the meetings and all the planning that we have to do to get that in, to get that energized, I mean, that's dollars and cents. That's overhead. That's, you know what I mean? And that's us doing our job. I mean, we have to do it, but that's
But there's the cost, like, there's the labor, even though it's management, there's the labor of doing all that additional work, and that's a cost. And there's the time cost.
I mean, we would do that anyways, but when it's such critical path, like if we had 6 months, if we had 6 months instead of 1.5 months of leeway on when that ships to when power needs to be on, guess what? We're not meeting on it every week. We're not getting the factory on the phone every week. We're not, you know what I mean?
You're not flying out to see something.
Exactly, which we have had to do. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that if it misses its first date, okay, maybe we're paying a little bit more attention. Or if it slips a little bit before it ships, okay, yeah, now let's ramp it up, right? But we have some time.
Wiggle room.
It's just not constant pressure.
Yeah, you're already behind.
Exactly.
Now, so that's a cost implication. Mm-hmm. There's obviously the time implication where it pushes out a schedule.
Sure.
Is there a concern that it's just one more headwind to, if that's a word, one more hurdle to getting a job working?
To get a job built?
Yeah. Or is it never going to be?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Critical enough that they're like, okay, we can't go with this because we needed this thing to be open and, you know, eight months, and now we're looking at a year just to get switchgear, and this is not going to happen. Do you see?
I haven't seen a job canceled or pushed back because we can't get a piece of gear or generator yet. What I will tell you is that we've seen jobs schedules push out, and then we're getting creative. So, you know, you're the owner. You say, look, I need this open in a year. My response to you is, okay, let's get creative. Right, and that's when you rely on your partners to get creative. Okay, can we get some salvage gear for now? Can we reduce the size of the service? And, you know, do you need the sizing that you need? And by the way, maybe we'll save you some money at the same time. Mm. Maybe the generator doesn't need to be a megawatt, and it could be 500 kW, and, you know, you could split up the loads and use, you know, the tenant who you haven't signed yet will handle the other generator, right? There are things like that, right? Yep. So get creative. Mm-hmm. How can we help get involved early? And, you know, as long as the transparency and there's trust in that, which, you know, which is why we get work, quite frankly, then that's the game you play. And you say, hey, look, here are the costs for this, and here's the lead time. And then here are your three or four other options to get this thing open. And sometimes it costs more. Yep. Sometimes that costs more and doesn't move forward. And the owner says, all right, we can wait, order it today. But if they can wait, and at the same time, you know, those types of things where, you know, we were doing some design assist, design build projects, right? Yep. Which are fantastic for us. And in regards to, hey, look, if we set a budget, we're able to help the design team design towards that budget. And if they put, you know, something crazy that's really expensive for us as an electrical contractor in there that we didn't assume was in there before, we offer them, hey, look, it, that's not in the budget, but this is, and in the end of the day, the owner still gets what they want, right? So we're able to control the cost pricing, but also when we're involved early, typically the largest switchgear and the generators, once they're sized, they don't change very often from that original DD set of drawings, right? So we can buy them right away, which means well before the final design is complete, which is when we typically buy them.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So we're saving months.
Yeah. That means having you on early enough.
But that means having us on early enough.
Yeah.
And that's like I said, that's it. So that's a trust factor. So then, you know, how do we price it fairly and make sure that you don't think you're getting screwed that you picked us early? Which is an easy conversation, quite frankly, because I feel like we're trustworthy and that's kind of our job.
Yeah, and if there's...
There's no opportunity to make a home run on that job, but you're going to make a fair profit, and you just show them that.
Yeah. And if a general contractor's worked with you enough, time creates that.
The GCs we work with, almost all of them have done some sort of this prior, and they understand that.
So you've alluded to it a lot in what you were just saying there, a lot of the ways, but so someone pushes a job across the table to you and says, okay, this is the job we have, and... The lead times don't work as currently constituted. What are the bullets in the chamber that, or what are the levers you can pull, or that you would recommend somebody if they had you involved early enough?
Sure.
Like, what's the approach here? What's okay? The you know, easiest thing to do is to go after this, and then if that doesn't work, we should be looking at this. And like, how would you break that down if you got? If that's the position a job is in, sure. And it's early enough, if you have enough time.
Well, having enough time is the whole key, right? So if an owner says, our lead times are 2 years or 100 weeks on this generator, and I need that size generator no matter what, we're going to have a hard time making that work. If there's flexibility in the design for various reasons, then we would be able, then that's where we can add some value and say, hey, look, is the design flexible? Do you need this size service? Because, you know, in fairness to engineers, a lot of times, you know, they weren't oversized things at times, mostly to say just in case, right? Yeah. You know, and that's fair. And I understand why they do that.
And it's early. They like have the client giving them all the right information.
Exactly. They don't have all the information. Exactly. Right. And they have to make assumptions, worst case. And when I budget a job just back of a napkin, I'm trying to do the same thing. Because the last thing I want to do is be 20% low on a, you know what I mean?
By nature, they're engineers. So you're already doing things with a safety factor,
100%,
right? Yeah, that's so where they come from.
So you dig into that value. Okay. You dig into that.
So design adjustments.
Design adjustments, for sure. And then, how much does money matter, right? We have obviously very good partners with some of the manufacturers, and sometimes there are other avenues to get pieces of switchgear for, you know, 2, 3, 4 times what they should cost, much, much faster. So how much, you know, is it worth it to you that much?
Yeah. And then how about just, I don't want to use this phrase value engineering because it's not about finding a cheaper product, but how about if one product is spec, but there's a different manufacturer or maybe even different
manufacturer,
but I don't know if there's like a, oh, hey, you could, and this might be an overlap in design, but hey, we could use this type of a unit heater, but if you use that type of a unit heater, we can get it faster.
Sure.
Right? Like,
yeah, so absolutely.
Is there that?
There's
not
some,
VE,
there's,
but that
that's not like, VE. That's doing our due diligence that we should be doing anyways, right? And if we can save you money along the lines, you know, even better.
So you could kind of, would you lump it into like product and or design? Yeah,
the specifications.
And or manufacturer.
Like correct.
Swapping out product.
Absolutely, or right? Yeah. And then we could really have some hard conversations with, you know, get some round pricing from some competition, from some manufacturers. And then, you know, we partner with them often and we say, hey, look, we have a little bit of buying power, I'd like to think, at this point. And we say, hey, I want to give you this, but here are the dates. How do I make that work? And a couple of them have, all right, well, if I move this switchboard to this plant in Connecticut, I can actually get it in 50 weeks, but I can't give it to you this way. I can give it to you in that way. Or if I move this from Mexico to Oregon, you know, I can probably get it in 60 weeks. And again, it's going to have to look like this, but we can make that. You know what I mean? So those are the types of things that you got to really dig into. And it's not always super easy to do, but that's our job to do, because someone said to us, we have a problem, please fix it. And at times we can't. And at times we say, hey, look, it's not 80 weeks, it's 70, but that's the best we can do. And the sooner you order it, the better. Right? At times the engineer says, you can't touch my design. You know, it's finalized and it is what it is. And the owner says, I trust my engineer. So we say, no problem. We'll get what you want, but we just have to wait. So how we look at it is those types of things, right? Okay. It's
And then what about execution wise? Mm-hmm. Can you, is there different ways where you can say, okay, listen, we won't have this equipment here, but if we prefab, you know, all the conduits leading up to it and this and that, and then we're just sliding a piece of equipment in at the 11th hour and we, you know, pre-tested everything else, obviously not with the generator or the switch gear, but like if it's a different type of equipment, are there ways you can do something there to kind of close that gap?
Absolutely. I would like to think that we would do that anyways. You know, so yes, we will have everything else ready and then slide this. You know, our wires are pulled to our generator, and when the generator sits on the roof on the steel, you know, we've got to make sure that it fits over the wires that we've pulled already, or maybe they're in a junction box just below. You know what I mean? Absolutely. That has to be done. I mean, we're doing a job now where we had issues with the switchgear, obviously, and the generator. February. We need to be done basically in a month and a half, call it. Power Live is in 2 weeks because the switchgear just got finished and the generator got dropped yesterday. But we've been cutting our crew the last 3-4 weeks because the rest of the work is complete. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So our, you know, yes, we don't have, we have temporary power in the building so we can test our fire alarm, but we're going to have to obviously retest it in permanent power. But yes, all that's wired, ready to go. You know, so you really need to plan ahead with that. You know, that roadblock moves down that schedule. All right, well, what can fill it? What can take its place? And I'd like to think that any savvy contractor should be able to do that. Okay. And most of them can.
All right, get your crystal ball out.
Oh, God.
Assuming you're... evaluation is correct about why we are where we are, which, and I,
that's a far assumption, but
I tend to agree with you. Okay. It seems to make sense, right?
No one's told me no, but okay.
Yeah. If you look at anecdotal evidence and kind of what you've seen with your own eyes, that kind of, it adds up, right? When I see that though, I say, okay, if the construction industry just holds flat everywhere else, then those numbers are going to keep going up because the data center construction is going to continue to chart that aggressive course. If the rest of the industry slows down, that can kind of balance out the growth on the, and maybe we get to like a level scale where, okay, we go down here and we keep climbing with data center work. Do you think... What do you think? Or do you think like, hey, even if we do slow down 10% in everywhere else, if we keep adding millions and millions of square foot of heavy, intensive, electrically intensive data centers, then the only direction is up, which is a frightening thought.
Yeah, so generally speaking, I'd like to believe that the manufacturers that we deal with are sophisticated enough and smart enough to figure out a way to not make the lead times get any worse. When I say that, I mean a couple of them are building new factories in the United States. Now it's going to take years for them to be online, right? But they're making investments. They are, you know, doing different things that, you know, whether it be, you know, they've already, they've all upgraded their switch, their software in the last couple of years, right? Or made line changes that like made breaker changes. Like I think all of that's kind of a little bit on pause. And by the way, the lead times that we're getting at 80, 85 weeks, you know, what's the hit rate on that? 70%? So I would like to tell you that that hit rate at a minimum is going to go from 70 to 95%, you know, during that slowdown, if you will, if we get a little slower, a little softer market here. So at least the lead time we get is real.
Yeah.
That's really,
I mean. Do you think it's that high, the percentage of where you're, you know, so many months into a project and they're like, yeah, it's still going to be another, add 3 months to what we told you?
Well, it depends on when the, you know, a lot of our jobs that started in 21 that are finishing now, you know, we started with 50, 60 weeks and it went to 85, 90, right? Yep. So the ones that we're quoting now are starting at that 85 week. And for the most part, the manufacturers are telling me that their hit rate on meeting those super long lead times is much better. So, but when it comes to, you know, let's say locally we have a softer market, or nationally, you name it, we have a softer market on construction generally, right? And this is commercial construction. We're not talking highways and, you know, all that other, not so much residential, right? That comes down, data centers still go up. My crystal ball says it doesn't get too much worse. Okay. I would like to just say that it's flat. And when I ask when there are improvements, everyone says not this year. And no one can tell me after that. But again, they're saying, but the percent, and I'm going to make this up. So talk to one manufacturer. They said last year, so this was, I met with them late of 23. So this, they were talking about 2022 at that point. Last year we hit, I'm going to use, again, I'm making the numbers up, 70% or 65% of our lead time, quarter lead time, which is terrible, right? Yep. So you give somebody an 80-week lead time and you're only hitting that 65% of the time, right? But they knew that and they tracked that data. And then they said in 2023 they were getting more towards the 85%. And so they think that that can still continue to at least get lead times that you can work around. So this job I just mentioned where we're getting switchgear in late and we're getting generator late, the building still isn't, you know, it's, the job overall was affected, and the poor owner, which I feel for, was certainly affected by these things. But I don't think it, you know, we had the information at, and we were able to make it work.
Yep.
In other ways.
Yeah. So you think certainty improves, but not necessarily time.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, for now.
For now. Okay.
It's too bad. I mean, we should start a manufacturing plant, get UL listed. You know what I mean? Source small. And the other problem, and I didn't mention this, so most of these factories too, and again, I don't know, but you know, there's thousands of pieces in a piece of switchboard, right? From screws to lugs to plastics to, you know, copper and whatever. They got to get all these raw materials. And if one of those suppliers falls down on them, and it's a real issue, then they can't build that board because the UL listing that they have says, I can only buy it from this, I can buy this lug from this person in Germany.
Because that's the way it was tested.
Because that's the way it was tested. Now, what the manufacturers have done over the past couple of years, for the most part, is those main components that they were getting shorted on and not getting the things that they needed, they've expanded that group in their UL listing
to test include it multiple ways.
That's right, to get more competitors. All right, you make that lug, you make that lug. They're almost identical. Mm-hmm. Let's get our UL to say that both of them work.
Very equal.
Right, so they're doing some of that, which is also a good thing for us, but that takes some time, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly an improvement that they're building factories, but I think most companies are going to be conservative. They're going to say, I'm not going to triple my capacity because there's triple need now. And then in 7 years from now, I've got two extra, you know, plants that I don't need. So I think that, yes, it'll be an improvement. They might add more capacity online, but I don't think they're going to add the capacity they need.
I'm not an economist, and you know, if I knew exactly what was going to happen in 7 years, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking about switchgear and generating lead times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
But that's just a human nature thing, though, right? Like, even think of what companies hire. They'll always hire a little less than what they need. 'Cause
really?
Yeah.
If they should bet on themselves.
Yes, they should.
and they should hire for what they think that they can go get.
Yeah.
So if they read the data center report that we referenced earlier, then they know that the demand will be there.
Yeah.
Maybe that's part of it too. Yeah. I don't know.
But the person you can lay off, right? If you build another building and then you don't need that capacity anymore, that's a...
Yeah, it's a fair point.
Yeah.
But at the same time, new buildings also need new technology, which typically leads to faster builds, things of that nature, yeah. Right? As long as you can get those raw materials.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not in their heads. I do speak to them often, but it's a problem that we're continuously dealing with. And when you read our report, it's like, oh my gosh, we're still dealing with this? And the answer is 4 years later, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I looked at that last report, and it was funny, like... All they did was took a screenshot and circled those two numbers, and I put it on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, north of 10,000 people looked at it. It was just a screenshot with two red circles on it.
Yeah.
And, like, it got people's attention.
It's wild. Like, and I feel bad. You know, like I said, the local contacts I have at distribution and through the manufacturers' reps, like, they have to have – that's all they're talking about. And it stinks, right? They have no control over their factories. And they're getting the information that's bad and they're passing it along and then we pass it along.
You're on the same boat,
And it's like, man.
Yeah.
They're trying. I can tell you that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this will be exciting. This is going to be exciting to see how this all works out. And thank you. I appreciate you coming and willing to dig in and discuss. And I like your theory. Yes, as a regular.
So again, this is... It's a problem that we're dealing with, but like I said, there are ways around it.
Awesome.
Thanks, John.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right.